This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by the wonderful patrons of Trek FM, who support us through Patreon. If you love Star Trek discussion, visit patreon.com/trekfm to find out how you can help and even become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trek.fm, and we thank everyone for their support.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome everyone to Continuing Mission, our look at the way fans are keeping Star Trek alive. I'm your host, Tony Robinson, and the primary focus of this show is on the fan series or independent productions that tell new stories set in the Star Trek universe. In this episode, I'm joined by Jonathan Lane, the creator and commentator of Fan Film Factor, a blog dedicated to discussing all and every detail pertaining to the world of fan film production. Jonathan has been researching and documenting the growth of Star Trek fan-made movies since January 2016. He's written extensively about the history of the genre and starts his journey as far back as 1974, when a movie entitled Paragon's Paragon first hit the little screen. Jonathan has also been an active member of Starfleet, the International Star Trek Fan Association, continuously since 1983, and holds the fictional rank of Vice Admiral. For 2.5 of those years, he served on the club's executive committee as Chief of Communications. As a paid freelance Star Trek consultant for Paramount Licensing, then Viacom Consumer Products, for nearly 8 years he worked with a parade of licensees on everything from writing the menu for Quark's Bar and Restaurant at Star Trek The Experience in Las Vegas to CD-ROM games and trading cards. So let's take the turbo lift now and go and meet with Jonathan Lane. Welcome aboard, Jonathan, and thank you for joining the show this week. It's great to have you here on Continuing Mission.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here, and you do not have to call me Vice Admiral.
I just have to bow occasionally.
No, just kiss the royal ring.
Okay. All righty. Well, we're going to get the ball rolling, and I'd like to have you tell us a little bit about yourself and involvement with Star Trek and your Fan Film Factor blogs. And then maybe have you discuss the way you document the many and varied fan film productions at large. But first, let's start with a little personal history. Who is Jonathan Lane and where does he hail from?
Who is Jonathan Lane? Well, I was born in New York City. I grew up in New York City. Went to school at Cornell. In 1993, I moved out to Los Angeles. So I've been here for about half my life. I joked when I first came out here that, hey, all I have to do is get hired on Star Trek and everything will be great. I never worked in the film industry. I pretty much was moving out here to become a graphic designer with my brother, who was a programmer, and we were starting a company in Los Angeles doing multimedia. And yet, at the end of 1994, after having been out here for just a year, I was sitting in Mike Okuda's office at Paramount turning down a job working on Star Trek.
What, were you crazy or?
What had happened was, at that point, Next Generation was finishing up. Deep Space Nine was going. Voyager was about to start. They had Star Trek Generations about to start. And he needed somebody from Star Trek, for the Star Trek art department, to help out. At the time, I was using a program called Macromedia Director, still Macromind Director at the time, which is what Mike Okuda was using to do all of his Okudagram animations on all the screens. So my friend Mojo was working at Foundation Imaging, was a very good friend of Mike's, and said, I've got a friend of mine who, you know, works in that kind of stuff, and he's a graphic designer, and I think he's available. I don't know. Well, it turns out I was kind of available because my brother and I had started this company. And so I was sort of hoping that I could do work for Mike freelance and still help my brother grow our business, which ended up lasting another 7 years. So it wasn't like this fly-by-night business. Unfortunately, Mike needed somebody who was going to work union hours, you know, potentially be there, you know, as much as 24/7 sometimes they worked. And I couldn't do that. I didn't want to screw my brother over. So I turned down a job working on Star Trek. But it all worked out in the end because a couple of years later, while working on a multimedia project, my brother and I had a multimedia company in Los Angeles. We were doing websites by 1995, and by 1996, one of the websites we were designing was for a CD-ROM game developed for Star Trek. They were doing Starfleet Academy, and I had written up this proposal that basically was written in English because I figured the people in licensing knew licensing, not necessarily Star Trek. So I explained why these little things that I was putting in there would be something that a Star Trek fan would understand. And the person who was reading this over, Juliet Dutton, in fact, had been hired because she knew licensing, not because she knew Star Trek, was desperately trying to catch up with this series and was taking like two episodes of Voyager home a night to watch with her husband. And here was this guy who understood not only Star Trek, but understood enough to translate Star Trek into English for people who hadn't watched every episode 300 times. And she called me up and she said, would you like to help us out as a fan consultant? And I would send you the CD-ROM game scripts and you can read them over. And just, you know, either type up an email or call me on the phone and tell me if this sounds right. And I said, so you want me to talk about Star Trek? And she said, yeah, and we'll pay you $20 an hour for it. So, oh, you're going to pay me. You're going to pay me to talk about Star Trek. Let me think. Oh, yes, of course I'm going to do that. And that was how I got started working with Viacom Consumer Products. And that was in 1996. And then later on that year, I was loaned out to the Paramount Parks Department and ended up writing the menu for Quark's Bar and Restaurant, Star Trek The Experience. So things like the Wrap of Khan or the Barbecue Continuum Pizza or the Hamburgers or the Fresh Catch of the Day, which was Fisherman's Wharf.
Oh,
yeah, that was my last one.
I know.
Oh, yes, I know.
Well, it sounds like, you know, if you weren't going to do that, they could have had you writing the titles for episodes of Star Trek, because the Punnage runs deep on Deep Space Nine.
Hey, you know what? One of my drinks for Quark's Bar actually made it into an episode of Deep Space Nine, the Warp Core Breach. Was on an episode of Deep Space Nine. So anyway, that I was actually working at, you know, not at Paramount. I was working as a consultant for Paramount for 8 years. This got me onto the lot, as often as I wanted to. I sat in Chakotay's chair on the Voyager set and played around the Deep Space Nine set. And don't tell anybody this, but I actually still have a glass from Quark's. They were striking the set, and it was just sitting on the floor, and nobody else was taking it. So,
well, if the Ferengi ever find out, you're a marked
oh,
man.
Oh man! Once you have their glass, you never give it back.
Well, that's
that's a rule of that acquisition rule.
Exactly.
So anyway, yeah. So that one thing led to another, and they brought me on to write Starship Spotter in 2001, which is a Star Trek reference book. So I am a published Star Trek author. And yeah, I've been involved with the Starfleet fan club since 1983. And if anybody is curious about that, please go to sfi.com, starfleetinternational.org, .com.org, sfi.org. But they're a great fan club. They're about 5,000 people around the world. And they've been going nonstop since 1974. I think they deserve a shout out. And by the way, if I do shout out to them, I can then go to Starfleet and say, everybody, listen to this podcast because Starfleet gets a shout out.
Well, I'm sure they'll appreciate it. Okay, so it's obvious you have a passion for writing and a love of Star Trek. You launched your blog in 2016, but why did you launch it at all? What brought you into that?
Oh, well, therein lies a tale. A tale of another fan film. That's been a little controversial, but I started blogging on the Axanar website. That was 2015. That was summer of 2015, and they were doing their Indiegogo campaign, and Alec Peters wanted to get as much excitement built around the Axanar website. He wanted a lot of eyeballs coming, so he wanted new content every day. And what he did was to contact the volunteers and the groupies and the stalkers. I was definitely a stalker at that point of Axanar, and the ones that were just, you know, really prolifically supportive about it, and said, would any of you like to help us out by writing a regular blog for our website? And Alec had a number of suggestions for, you know, interviews with people and throwback Thursdays and fan film Fridays and pretty much something new every day. And I put up my virtual hand and I said, hey, I'll take fan films. You know, I'd been involved with a couple of fan films. I was part of Voyages of the USS Angeles in my Starfleet chapter of the USS Angeles here in L.A. Back in 1999, we'd done a fan film. That ended up growing into Hidden Frontier. And I was in Hidden Frontier as a production assistant on a couple episodes. I appeared in an alien much later on at some point. I was in a lot of makeup. It was funny. You know, I'd gotten to really love fan films. I'd, you know, obviously seen Star Trek New Voyages, and I was into Farragut and Exeter. And so I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'd love to write about this stuff. And one other guy volunteered to handle fan film Fridays. And the two of us were going to alternate, except that after about 3 weeks, he had a personal issue come up and he couldn't do any blogs. So suddenly I was having to write a blog a week about fan films. But there's a lot of fan films to write about. And so I researched the histories of some of them and background stuff. And then I started interviewing some of the fan film creators. And I had these interviews. And by the time I hit the end of the year, I guess I had written, you know, weekly, probably upwards of 20 or 30 different blogs about fan films. But then in late December, as most people know, Axanar was sued. And in early January, I was about to go live, or about to publish an interview I'd done with a fan film producer. And he asked me not to do it. He said, I don't want to be on the Axanar website. I'm afraid it's going to put a target on my fan film. And I understood that. I wasn't going to, you know, make anybody uncomfortable. But I told Alec about this because suddenly I was going to be missing a week. And Alec was concerned because he feels, you know, say what you want about Alec Peters. He feels very, very positive about Star Trek fan films. He's very supportive of them. He thinks that they're a great genre that more people need to know about them. And he was concerned that if being on the Axanar website was going to be an albatross around my neck, that wasn't fair to me and it wasn't fair to fan films. So he said, you know, John, you need your own blog. You need to be separate from Axanar. And I said, well, I've never really done my own blog before. I mean, I've done it on your site, but I don't know how to set up my own blog site. So Alec very generously volunteered the time of Mike Bawden, who was and still is the PR director of Axanar. And Mike is based in Iowa, and he's a great guy. And he does blog stuff, and he sets up blogs for other people. So it's not very difficult for him to do. He had a domain for me to use. So he set up the back end of Fan Film Factor. I designed it and just started writing. I basically initially just used a lot of the stuff I'd used from the Axanar website, and then I started doing new interviews. And I would go to people and I would say, you know, look, I can put you – I still did the fan film Fridays for Axanar. But I said, you know, look, I can put you in both places or I can keep you off of Axanar and just have you on Fan Film Factor. And ultimately, I think only two or three fan filmmakers ever said, well, just keep me on Fan Film Factor and don't put me on Axanar. But at least it was the opportunity, you know, for them to avoid it if they wanted to. And it just kept growing. And, you know, without the constraint of being limited to Fan Film Friday, I was doing blogs once a day, once every 2 days, at most once every 3 days, trying to keep the stuff fresh. And so there's all sorts of content up there now. I mean, if you go there, I think I've written 350 different blog entries. So, you know, go there, have fun.
I've read quite a few of your blog entries and they're quite fascinating. And you have quite a talent. Jokingly said, have you ever considered becoming a writer? But that was very tongue-in-cheek. But
Well, you do know I do have a published book in addition to Starship Spotter. I actually have Being Santa Claus. It's a real book about a friend of mine who's a professional Santa Claus, has been for about 30 years. So if you go to Amazon.com and type in Being Santa Claus, please feel free to buy my book because, well, I don't get any more money for it because I already got the
If they ever do a crossover Star Trek Santa Claus movie here leading the pack.
well, I'll tell you, there is a Santa Claus connection between my book and Star Trek. The person who is Santa Claus in that book, the person who's been Santa Claus since 1991, was at the time I was the chief of communications for Starfleet. He was the president.
All right.
Santa Claus, Sal Lizard, was actually the president of Starfleet for 3 years. And so, yeah, Santa Claus is a Trekkie, everybody.
That's good to know. Because if we thought Santa Claus was a Star Wars fan, deer fur would fly, I'm sure.
Well, it's not just a lump of coal in your stocking. You're basically suddenly being strangled in your sleep.
Yeah, exactly. So when it came to covering fan film projects, how many do you think you've covered? And do you know the number?
There's got it dozens and dozens. I mean, there's probably at least 25 or 30 fan series that are covered on my rating section, my ranking section. But there's just been so many more that there's just been news stories about. You know, even if I didn't necessarily, you know, write a full interview or explanation of a fan film that was coming out, I, you know, still featured it. Like, for example, Chance Encounter, it came out very recently. When it came out, that's out of Great Britain. They did a fantastic job. But I only wrote up maybe a few paragraphs about it, although they had wonderful updates along the way. So there's probably been maybe 7 different individual blog entries about Chance Encounter, but they haven't had like a full, you know, one part or two part, you know, either interview or feature. Where some other ones, recently when Star Trek Dark Armada had their series finale, which came out, I think, last month or 2 months ago. They're out of the Netherlands. I was going to just announce it and say, you know, Dark Armada releases its series finale and, you know, take a look at it. It's called Out of Time. But I realized that Dark Armada had been running for 10 years. And it did some really, really great episodes. I mean, some of my favorite stuff of all fan films is Dark Armada. I mean, I've got other fan favorites, but they've just gotten some really, really nice stuff. And I didn't feel like I should just give it a quick little blurb. So I ended up taking about 3 or 4 weeks to write a full history of all 10 years of Star Trek Dark Armada. So when I have time to do that, I do it because I think all fan films deserve this chance. You know, there's certain ones that are still waiting. I'm currently in the process of trying to create a feature article from a 2.5-hour long interview I had with Craig Sheeler of Star Trek New Voyages. He was so fascinating that we just had the longest interview in the world, and I'm trying to pull out the best stuff of it. I've been working on that for months. To just get this one ready. So, you know, there's no, you know, formula of how I do an interview with somebody. I did a very, very fast interview with Ray Tessie last week.
Because hey, so did I.
So did you.
He's a very enthusiastic guy, and it was great to talk to him.
Yeah. Very enthusiastic. For those of you who don't know or didn't listen last week, he's doing Starship Republic on the Starbase Studio sets. He's trying to raise $16,000 on his Indiegogo account. He's only raised about $1,000 so far. He could use a little money, even if it's just $5 or $10, because, you know, I mean, all fan films, I think, deserve our support. But Ray was great, but he wanted to do an interview with me as fast as possible, and I realized I wanted to help him with his Indiegogo. So in his case, I just shot him a bunch of questions via email, and he shot me answers back about 18 hours later. Boom, interview's ready. So, you know, like I said, there's no formula for how I do this. And sometimes I'll research something for a month or two. Sometimes people will come to me. Sometimes I'll go to them. I feel really, really guilty having not gone to certain people. Like, for example, Nick Cook is still waiting for me to do a feature on Star Trek Intrepid, and I keep promising that I'm going to do an interview. But, you know, it's just there's so much to juggle in all of this. And I never thought going into this that I would be this busy with this blog. But it is just it is so time consuming. And of course, my wife would really love me to do something that makes me more than, like, you know, 93 cents a day on Google ads. But at least for the time being, this is my job. This and raising a 6-year-old. you know, once the 6-year-old's a little bit older and I have to get a real job, Fan Film Factor may be a little bit less prolific, but at least for right now, enjoy it while you can, folks.
Were you surprised by the number of movies being made? Had you any clue?
I knew there was a lot. I don't know if folks are aware of this, but when Axanar was first sued, I was asked by the legal team to put together a list of all the Star Trek fan films that were out there because they wanted to, you know, use that in court. So I dove into that project to try to find as many as I could. And less than a month later, I had created a 128-page document that showed over 100 different Star Trek fan films and series at that time, which was just the beginning of 2016. And many of these series had multiple episodes. Like, for example, Hidden Frontier had 70 different episodes over the course of 10 years. So of these 100 films and episodes and films and series, there's about 250 hours of amateur filmed Star Trek fan films, at least as of a year ago. It is now a year later. And I can only imagine that that number has gone well over 300 hours, possibly even over 400 hours. Fan films are not slowing down.
Do you think this is a result of fans being starved of Star Trek since Enterprise went off the air in 2005 or 6, whenever the last episode went out?
You know, that's an interesting question, but I don't think that it's that they've been starved for Star Trek so much as that this was a natural outgrowth of what was already going on from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. The first Star Trek fan films actually were in the 60s. They were, you know, the Star Trek was still on and, you know, there were parents taking video, well, not videos at the Super 8 at that point, of their kids in their pajamas, you know, playing Star Trek in the living room. But there are like, you know, home movies of this on the internet. You know, not only did Star Trek fan films exist in the 1970s and 1980s and such, but fan fiction existed. And, you know, fan comic books, and audio dramas. It happened, you know, even when Star Trek was still on, even when Next Generation and Deep Space Nine had two Star Treks on at the same time, and then Voyager and Deep Space Nine were on at the same time, fans were still doing all this stuff prolifically. So I think the reason we've had so many more fan films of late is two reasons. First of all, the technology has come down in price. You can make stuff that looks reasonably good, sometimes very, very good, for a reasonably low budget. You know, it doesn't have to be $1.4 million. Yeah. Or it could be, you know, until CBS tells you, no, it can't be. You know, when the fans were doing this, you know, James Colley spent $125,000 building his bridge set back in 2003. Because nobody told him he couldn't. And that was the thing, is that fans were just doing as much as they could because nobody told them that they couldn't. And I think that, you know, the studios were just kind of watching this, hoping it would all go away. And the opposite happened, you know, with when you don't tell them what they can't do, they're just like, oh, okay, I'll just do more until you tell me to stop. And they never told them to stop. And we all know how that ended. Anyway, I think the other reason that fan films are so prolific right now is because fan films are so prolific right now. I know that sounds regressive, but I think that it's just one of those things where because so many fans are doing it, other fans are doing it. And I think as soon as somebody saw James Colley building his own set, it's like, wow, we can do that? And so Exeter built its own set, and then Farragut built its own set. And, you know, Hidden Frontier was doing all that stuff with green screen. So Star Trek Intrepid started doing that, and Dark Armada started doing that. It was just one of those, one thing after another. James Colley had George Takei and Walter Koenig in an episode. You can do that? Well, great. Then Sky Conway did that for Star Trek of Gods and Men. But now he had not only one actor, he had 9 Star Trek actors in his. So it was just one of those cases of, you know, everybody was kind of keeping up with the Joneses. So, you know, I think that fans just, they so want to play in the sandbox. And if they see somebody else playing in the sandbox, and once again, nobody says, don't play in the sandbox. They're going to want to play in that same sandbox.
Well, I think it's every fan's fantasy to walk the corridors of a starship or sit in the captain's chair on a bridge and you know, direct their crew here, there, and everywhere, and fire phasers at the enemies and whatever. And I'd certainly like to do that myself if the opportunity arises. So if fans weren't making movies because they were starved of TV episodes, were they doing it? Do you think they were doing it because some of them were literally budding filmmakers who literally did want to get in on the behind the camera or on the stage?
Oh, certainly for some of them. I know that Rob Caves, back when he first started Star Trek Hidden Frontier, was hoping to use that as a reel. He never appeared in his own fan film. Actually, he appeared in like bit parts or whatever, but he wanted to be behind the camera. You know, some other people wanted to be in front of the camera. You know, I think it was always Vic Mignogna's, you know, dream to, you know, play Captain Kirk. You know, so creating Star Trek Continues was a way for him to do that. You know, so there's a lot of reasons for Star Trek fans to, you know, make their own fan films. And yeah, some of them did want, you know, their big break in Hollywood, or were hoping to, you know, use it, if not for that, to just sort of say, you know, hey, I like making films. You know, back in high school, I wrote some Star Trek fan fiction because I liked writing. I used to draw the Enterprise on my homework because, you know, I'm a decent artist. You know, I think it leaks. I think, you know, if you're a fan and you want to create your own Star Trek, it's not just that you're starved for Star Trek. I mean, if you think about it, there's like 700 episodes of Star Trek out there. You could watch Star Trek for a month nonstop with no commercials, no bathroom breaks, and you still wouldn't watch every Star Trek that was available to you.
Well, you're probably aware that here on Trek FM, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, we encouraged all our listeners to watch Star Trek every day for a year. And it just worked out that they could do it in 365 days by watching two episodes and one movie every day for a year. And many people did do that. And we have a whole series of podcasts documenting every episode from all through the year for 2016.
Well, I don't know if you would allow me to do a shout out to another podcast, but I was contacted a few weeks ago by a podcaster out of Minneapolis who has a podcast called Enterprising Individuals. And his idea was to talk about individual episodes of Star Trek as part of a way of interviewing somebody. So he reached out to me, and he's interviewed other people in the Star Trek fan community. He said, okay, John, what's your favorite Star Trek episode? And he did an interview with me talking about, well, it wasn't my favorite Star Trek episode because Doomsday Machine was already gone. But instead we did Mirror Mirror, which my 6-year-old son and I had just watched, because you're talking about watching Star Trek every night. Well, I exercise for half an hour every night on the recumbent bike, and Jaden, my 6-year-old, watches Star Trek with me. And it's fantastic watching the episodes with him, because he really, really is eating all this stuff up. And so we had just watched Mirror Mirror. So when this fellow from Enterprising Individuals reached out to me, I said, why don't we do Mirror Mirror? And part of the podcast can be with Jaden, my son. And so we scheduled a separate little insert of about 15 minutes, and Jaden's on that podcast. I think it's going live like either this week or next week, but you know, if you go to Fan Film Factor, I'll have a link there. But, anyway, Jaden's little segment was just so priceless. You know, mine, which is another hour of that podcast, is probably, you know, sounds like this, don't worry about it, but his was just amazing. And just, he wants to watch Star Trek. We finished dinner and he says, okay, can we watch some more Star Trek? I mean, this is my dream come true. As long as this kid will do this, by the time he's 9 or 10, he's not going to care anymore. I know, but I'm just eating it up while I still can. So yes, we are watching Star Trek every night. And last night, by the way, Trouble with Tribbles and the barroom fight, and Jaden is cracking up. And every time they cut to a scene on the Enterprise and there's more Tribbles on there, he's yelling, Daddy, look how many Tribbles there are. And he's cracking up. And oh, it's just so perfect, Tony. I love it.
They hit a seam of gold when they launched the Tribbles episode. Yep.
Well, Jaden says he wants to see it again. So he has to watch it again tonight, apparently.
So Jonathan, where do you get your ideas from? How do you find out about these fan films?
they don't just appear out of nowhere.
Well, you know what? I have a lot of different potential sources. First of all, there are Facebook groups for fan filmmakers. So, you know, I always look for them for news on stuff. You know, there's a lot of sources that I go to. Facebook is great. You know, sometimes you just see a post from somebody saying, hey, did you see this new trailer for, or somebody just released this or that. There are actually fan film other groups on Facebook, fan filmmaker groups. A lot of times people will post to that, you know. So if, for example, Potemkin Pictures releases a new episode, you know, Randy Landers, you know, Randy Landers, who is the executive producer of that, you know, he'll post whatever the new episode is on there. So it's like, oh, new episode for Potemkin Pictures, Starship Tristan. And then suddenly the next day, Starship Tristan releases its latest episode. Sometimes people come to me. I have people who contact me through Fan Film Factor or just email me directly, saying, you know, I have a fan film I'm making. Can you do an interview or can you do a feature on it? Or, you know, hey, John, did you see about this? Did you notice this? So it's just like a whole bunch of different places. And one of the best places, believe it or not, that I go to, and I check this site probably two or three times a week, is Star Trek Reviewed. It's a blog. Barbara Reeder started doing that many years ago, like 2009, I think. And if you think I have a lot of stuff on fan films, she and her team cover everything. And as soon as any fan film comes out, boom, it's there. There's a link. So yeah, definitely check there if you want the latest news. And if you don't want the necessarily latest news, but the just latest news, then you can go to Fan Film Factor. And the thing that I do that Barbara doesn't do is I elaborate more on these things. I'll have the interviews and I'll have the longer feature articles on that stuff. But, you know, the person and the people with their, you know, their ear to the grindstone, you know, coming out with pretty much as it happens, breaking news on fan films, or releases is Star Trek Reviewed.
Fantastic. Yeah. I like your little asides, that you put in when you're writing, you know, you go along and then it's a zoinks, or did I say that? Yes, I did, folks. Uh-huh. That kind of stuff.
Well, that's because, you know, I realize that in general, I talk too much and I'm really boring. So if I don't put those little aside funny things in, I'm just going to put people to sleep.
I don't think so. I think people are I think people are reading you precisely because of what you do, and it's incredibly interesting and incredibly in depth. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you something. When this gig is finally done, I'm going to change my career at the age of 50 something, and I'm going to become a teacher. I actually did teach for a few years ago. I subbed for a person who had a computer class when she went on maternity leave. And I love teaching. My mom was a teacher for 55 years. And a friend of mine said, John, you're a teacher. You just don't know it yet. So at some point I'm going to take this tendency to, you know, explain things with little funny asides to keep your attention and put it to good use with young student minds, probably junior high school math. We'll see if I can make that funny. Anyway, yeah, so if you ever see that Fan Film Factor is not as prolific as it used to be, it's because I finally got myself a job as a teacher.
All right. That's great. Of the fan movies that you do watch, do you have a particular favorite at all? Or is that a hard question to ask?
Well, on fanfilmfactor.com, I have two rules that are part of my prime directive. Rule number one. There is no such thing as a bad Star Trek fan film. Rule number two, if you see a bad Star Trek fan film, refer to rule number one. I don't like to insult any fan film. And in the same way, I don't necessarily like to say, you know, this is my favorite of all of them. But you can't really avoid that because obviously there are some fan films that are better than others. And I know this. So which ones do I enjoy the most? Which ones do I think are, you know, some of the best things out there? I mean, obviously Star Trek Continues, one of my absolute favorites. You know, it's one of the few fan series where I can easily watch an episode two or three or four times. And I have, Fairest of Them All, or third episode. I think I've watched that four times. It doesn't lose anything. It's a fantastic episode. Prelude to Axanar. I mean, I've probably watched that a dozen times. I think other really good series out there that people should try out. Obviously, I thought Dark Armada was great. And obviously Star Trek New Voyages, I think their episodes can be a little uneven at times, but there have been some really, really good ones. And I think World Enough in Time with George Takei, still makes me cry at the end. If you haven't seen that one, see that one. It's fantastic. Starship Exeter only did two episodes. Their first one is not anything to write home about. Their second one's probably one of the few must-see Star Trek fan films out there. There's some really funny parody stuff out there, and I realize that it's one of the ones that I help make, but the Amut Time – well, sorry, the Stalled Trek series, Stalled, S-T-A-L-L-E-D, Stalled Trek, Mark Largent did a parody of Amut Time called Amut Time several years ago. I think that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen, and – we were joking during the Axanar lawsuit that he should do a parody of Axanar, Prelude to Axanar, where like all of the executives are coming in and tearing down the scenery and, you know, putting, censored over stuff and covering this up. And I said to him, I said, I would pay to see that fan film. And he emailed me back and he said, well, you know what? If you want to help me write it, I'll do it for you. And I said, I've never written a script before. And he said, well, that's okay. I'll help you write it. Let's do this. And I said, okay, let's do this. And we went back and forth with these ideas over the next week or so, put together a 7-page script. It got funnier and funnier. We both kind of went back and forth with our gags in this. And it's called Prelude to Axed We Are, AX'D We Are. And I ultimately ended up not only co-writing it, but co-producing it. And I did four of the voices for this thing. So, yes, I'm now a fan film producer myself. So, yes, I'm patting myself on the back saying, go watch my fan film. But honestly, it's hysterical. It's wonderful. And then I'd say, I could go on and on. I'd say that one of the other ones that's really must see out there is Tommy Kraft's Star Trek Horizon, which was done literally in his parents' basement, which is just an example of what you can do when you're an amazing filmmaker who has no other life or anything else to do for 3 years but make amazing Star Trek fan films. And I really wish he could have done the sequel to that, but unfortunately his ship was the USS Discovery. You can probably tell why Paramount and CBS reached out to him shortly after the lawsuit was filed against Axanar, saying, take down your $250,000 Kickstarter. This is not a suggestion. But, he was amazing, and I think he still is amazing. One of my favorite fan filmmakers. I love talking to him. It was one of my favorite interviews I've ever done.
Yeah, he's a great favorite with everybody at Trek FM, and I've heard him a few times myself on various episodes. Yeah.
But hey, if you're not sure which Star Trek fan film to watch, go to Fan Film Factor and go to the section where I have my ratings or my rankings, whatever I call them. And one of the rankings is highest to lowest rate. I don't review them. I don't feel that's fair. But I give them all a ranking, and the lowest ranking I have is essentially, hey, good try. It's the participation trophy, and only a couple get that. But it goes all the way up to must-see and must-see plus. So, if you're kind of wondering what the best ones to start with, go down there. It goes from highest to lowest, and, you'll probably be surprised. There's some really, really good Star Trek fan films out there.
Yeah, there are some terrific fan productions out there. If you had to ask me, did I have a favorite? Well, I wouldn't select an episode of somebody's output. But I rather like the, not the CGI versions of the ships going through space, but the CGI versions of the crew members, because the filmmakers in those particular instances can capture different ways people walk, different ways people look, different reaction shots, and they can modify them to tell a story. And it sort of, not to denigrate somebody's inability to act, but the people who create an animated version of Star Trek can direct it accordingly. And I kind of like the animation side of things. That's just a particular favorite for me.
Are you talking specifically about Star Trek Aurora?
Well, when I first saw Star Trek Aurora, I just sat there with my eyes wide open, my jaw dropping, because it was incredible.
Yeah. So I would also put that on the must-see list. If folks want to go to auroratrek.com, two episodes were made. It took like 5 or 6 years per episode because all of those frames, animational frames, 30 per second, had to be rendered like one at a time. And it took like, you know, a night to render just three frames. But that was a fantastic do-it-yourself Star Trek fan film that was really amazing. And unfortunately, the guidelines have sort of made the idea of a continuing series almost impossible. So the creator of Aurora Trek has decided to hang up his rendering machine for at least the time being, which is sad for me. But there are two really amazing episodes out there that are worth seeing, and I would highly recommend those as well.
Okay. Did you ever want to get back into acting? You appeared in one or two productions. Are you waiting for the call?
It's funny. You know, I was having a conversation, on Saturday night with Vance Major Owen, who is the creator of Melbourne. And he filmed his fan film is going to be coming out pretty soon. And he filmed on the Starbase Studio sets. And he said to me, he said, look, John, if you're ever in the area of northern Arkansas, you have an open invitation to come and visit those sets. And if you're there in September, I would love to feature you on an episode of Melbourne. And I'm saying, well, you know, I do have a 6-year-old, and September happens to be the beginning of the school year. And I don't think his mom is going to let me keep him out of school just so I can take him to a Star Trek set in the middle of nowhere in Mountain Home, Arkansas, which is not necessarily around the corner from Southern California. So anyway, I said to Vance, I said, you know, I look, as much as it's on my bucket list to be able to walk the sets in Starbase Studios and to go up to Ticonderoga and to see the James Cawley sets, and I don't think it's practical at this point. And he said, well, you know, I'd love to get you on to Melbourne, even as like, you know, a background character against a green screen, if you've got like, you know, a curtain you could hang up behind you. And I said, well, I've got better than a curtain. You know, Industry Studios has a green screen that's the size of a soccer field. I can go up there. And I'm sure that Rob Burnett wouldn't mind just, you know, putting a camera on the tripod and, you know, getting me, you know, in my Star Trek uniform in front of the green screen. I'll send it to you. And he was like, seriously? Dude, we have to do that. So you might actually see me on a Star Trek fan film at some point. We'll see if Alec Peters goes for that idea of using Ares Studios to videotape John Lane for a fan film in out of Kansas, which is where Vance lives. Anyway, I think that'd be cool. In fact, I actually think it would be really, really cool because I know that, you know, Alec likes to help out other Star Trek fan films. Is if people can't get onto sets and, you know, they want to get people in front of green screens, quality green screens. Green screens aren't all over the place either. You know, maybe that's one of the things that Industry Studios can be used, because I know that, you know, the idea is for them to, you know, help other fan films as much as possible and be a place where they can film. But we'll see. You know, at this point, sure, I'd love to appear in some Star Trek fan films. Am I a good actor? Probably not. Although I did get a standing ovation in high school playing Nicely Nicely in Guys and Dolls. So perhaps I can act at least a little bit or sing at least a little bit. Probably not. Yeah, you know, it's fun. I mean, the thing is that, you know, I'm not William Shatner. I'm not Patrick Stewart. I don't even pretend to be. But we fans don't have to be. We, you know, we're very forgiving people if the rest of us can't act or if we don't necessarily look like we're shaped exactly like a Starfleet vice admiral would be, unless the vice admiral himself is Santa Claus, because that's more of my shape.
Okie doke. That's fantastic. All right. Well, we're kind of coming to the end of our little talk here. But before we go, may I ask, How can people find out more about Jonathan Lane, or not particularly Jonathan Lane, but Fan Film Factor? Where can they find you, Jonathan?
Well, fanfilmfactor.com. That's the easiest way to find me. I am going to, at some point, continue writing the bio blogs. I wrote, when I first started off, I was just trying to throw as much content in there as possible. So I wrote the story of how I turned down a job working on Star Trek at Mike Okuda's office as the first part of my bio. And that's now, that's hidden. I mean, that's like 350 blogs down now. So I think I'm going to actually create a bio page, and I'm going to go and tell some of my other, you know, Star Trek stories from my life as a professional Trekkie. But aside from that, you know, and by the way, there is a Memory Alpha page on me. Go figure. So, you know, go to Memory Alpha, put in Jonathan Lane. I'm there. But aside from that, you know, hey, I'm there. I'm on Facebook. There is a Fan Film Factor Facebook page. You know, and of course, you can contact me through the fanfilmfactor.com website. There's a little contact us button. I don't know why I have the word us on there. It's just me. You know, on Facebook there as well, on the Fan Film Factor Facebook page. So yeah, give me a shout out and say hi, and I'll say hi back. And oh, by the way, feel free to comment on my blog, because lots and lots of people comment, and some of them have a lot to say. And some of those people with a lot to say are me.
Okay. Okay, well, we've come to the end, so thank you, Jonathan, for talking with us at Continuing Mission. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and it goes without saying that we really enjoy reading your blog at Fan Film Factor, and we wish you well in keeping up the good work, and live long and prosper.
Well, thank you, and I also want to say I'm glad to have Continuing Mission back, because this was a really fantastic fan film oriented podcast, and I have missed it. So yes, thank you for taking it over, Tony, and best
much.
Of luck as you go off into the final frontier.
That was Jonathan Lane from Fan Film Factor, a man with a serious finger on the Star Trek pulse. Do check out his website at fanfilmfactor.com. Now, Continuing Mission isn't the only show on Trek FM. We have a wide variety of Star Trek topics to offer you across our network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It doesn't take much to take some of the most iconic TOS stories and see how the reboot cast could add their own flavor and make it cool and interesting to watch.
Warp 5.
They think that it breaks continuity by having them in there, and it breaks established continuity. And I felt that way as well the first few times that I watched this episode. I was not happy to see the Ferengi in here. I thought it was fan service. I thought it was a little bit too much fan service. And I also thought that it didn't make any sense because of what had been established in The Last Outpost and the battle.
Saturday Morning Trek.
And the backgrounds were actually reused later in other Filmation properties.
That would be cool to see that. I never watched the He-Man cartoon, but I'm sure if I watched it today, I'd be getting like, oh, that's the planet from yesteryear or
yeah.
Whatever episode.
Melodic Treks.
You know, when you're used to recording either at Abbey Road or Sony Studios in Hollywood, it's hard to go to another room that doesn't have that same kind of sound, you know. And also the depth of players is not, you know, it's just not as deep as it is here in London, for instance, you know.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So, why not check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond? If you're an Apple user, be sure and hit the subscribe button. That helps us out with ranking, and it makes it a whole lot easier for other listeners to find us on iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, well, we've still got you covered. You can find all our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download the MP3 files from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way you can help all our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and milestone contribution levels there, along with all the great perks we have for you.
or go to our website at Trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. And don't forget the Babel Conference, which you can find on Facebook. The Babel Conference is a closed group, but if you ask to join, we'll let you right in, and you can join all the hot topics we discuss on there. We also invite you to leave a rating or a review of Continuing Mission on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. I can always be found on the Babel Conference on Facebook, and on Twitter you can find me at Shamrock165. We would like to acknowledge the rest of the Trek FM team, without which this or any other podcasts would not be possible. C. Brian Jones, our founder and publisher of Trek FM. Executive producers Matthew Rushing and Ken Tripp. And Aaron Harvey, our highly accomplished art director. I'm Tony Robinson, and thank you for joining with us today on Continuing Mission. See you soon on the next mission.